Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So let's get to know each other. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Des Bishop Podcast. Still don't have a name. Might just leave it as the Des Bishop Podcast. Keeps things nice and simple. This is our second one, although my chat with Lisa was the first one that I actually recorded. And I thought I had had some technical difficulties, but I since sorted it out and found the track that Lisa's voice was on. So, you know, some teething problems, and it's all working out. I myself am a little stressed because I'm getting ready to go back to Ireland tomorrow, and I'm not that prepared. I have to empty out the apartment that I've been using that was mentioned in the Dan Soder conversation. And maybe mentioned again. And then I have to record another interview with Leonard Oots, who's also going to Dublin next week. And that will be four chats that I've recorded with comedians that are heading over to Dublin, which is great because that's what I wanted to do. That was my motivation to get this party started and share a bit of that New York comedy scene with Irish people. Knowing that they'll have a chance to go see those people straight away next week for the Vodafone Comedy Festival, which starts on Thursday. I'm there myself Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then I'm in Cork on Sunday night with an extra Grey Matters tour, and then I'm off to the Edinburgh Fringe. I have nothing else to say, really, on my own. I'm just knee-deep in washing sheets and preparing things. I have renters coming into one house, and yet I was subletting an apartment. So I'm just knee deep in all that stuff. A shout out to all those parents out there that are just organizing this shit day after day. Because for me, just organizing my own crap is driving me crazy. So without further ado, please let me introduce Lisa Traeger. Awesome comic. I've really gotten to know her well over the last 12 months, working in the Comedy Cellar mostly with her, and a gig we did in Caroline's. Cool lady, I have to say. Love hanging out with her. Absolutely filthy. Dirty-ass bitch when it comes to her sense of humor, which I like. I hope you like. She certainly didn't hold back in the chat. So for those that don't like unashamedly comfortable conversations about sex and things like that, probably not the best podcast to listen to. Anyway, enough of me. Here's Lisa. So, ladies and gentlemen of Ireland, and then hopefully eventually more than just Ireland, please welcome Lisa Traeger.
Hi, guys. Exciting.
So,
with Irish royalty.
Yeah. Now, this is it's important for me that I interview you first because you're my big gamble for the Vodafone Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
So,
I performed in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Kind of same crowd or
similar,
not really?
Very similar.
Yeah, I mean, mostly I talk about fucking and drinking, so I don't know how I can't relate to them.
No, I think it's going to be fun. Who doesn't like fucking and drinking?
Yeah.
No, I'm really, honestly, all joking aside, I'm not overly concerned, but it is a situation where I did genuinely push for you.
I'm very happy about it. Yeah. I'm really excited to go. And my friend Alex Crawley is going to be there. Hey, girl.
So, before we talk about...
I've been to Ireland. I love it there.
Oh, you've been there?
Yeah. But I didn't do shows. Me and my sister rented a car in Dublin, and then we drove around. So, we went to Galway Bay, we went to Northern Ireland, and, like, Giant's Causeway, and
yeah.
Belfast and everything.
So, do you think you remember anything from your time that you're going to turn into local gold when you're on stage?
No, because I was alone, so that was sad. Because my sister... I mean, she found out her friend had cancer and she couldn't, she was too sad. So she ditched me, which is fine.
Fine. And sounds so, like one of my shows.
What?
It's supposed to be about comedy, ends up being about cancer.
So I was alone in Dublin and there's so much you can do by yourself. I'm not a friendly person. So
you're not a friendly person?
I am sometimes, but like out strangely alone. No,
no. But you like drinking and you like partying.
Yeah.
It's a good city to
I
be.
Would go like I did the Guinness tour alone. I walked around alone. It's like fun. I'm fine being by myself, but it's going to be more fun with a bunch of comics
sure.
wanting to party and like
yeah.
have a
no,
good
time.
No,
but what I mean is like you like I think more than I don't want to make a general judgment about Irish crowds, but I think they appreciate a bit of local more than the average country's audience.
I have a foreskin joke.
A foreskin joke?
Yeah.
Yeah, only because Irish men tend not to be circumcised.
Well, yeah, anyone with like an accent.
Oh, usually. Anyone with an accent has foreskin.
Yeah.
What is your foreskin joke?
That's it. I just go, I like an accent where you could tell there's foreskin. Ah. And that's all I say.
I'd be curious to see how that goes down in Ireland. Just because foreskin is the expectation.
Yeah, it's like a weird thing here.
I know, but I was born in London.
Yeah.
So I was not circumcised. So I actually lived my whole life before moving to Ireland as the odd one out.
In England, they're all circumcised?
In Europe. I don't like to consider myself connected to England. I just happened to be born in England. As a result, my foreskin was spared. Okay. So I grew up as a young man in New York with the odd cock.
I get what you're saying. Okay. So. Yeah. Did you notice people being upset?
Well, I have to be honest. I moved to Ireland when I was 14, so I hadn't had the experience with a lot of shocked women just yet.
Okay.
And by the time I came around to being with American girls that might be surprised, I was no longer concerned about their reaction to my foreskin.
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, I didn't intend to
talk
about
it. The trend's coming back, though.
Yeah, because it's kind of pointless.
Yeah, it's a weird thing to do.
Yeah, but I mean, like... I know you're Jewish, like culturally or whatever, but obviously somehow that just became the thing to do in America and it wasn't the thing to do in Europe.
Yeah, I wonder what that is, but it looks better.
Without or with?
Yeah, without.
It's just what you're used to. But I guess not a lot of people like turtlenecks, so I can appreciate
it. No, and I've had sex with people with foreskin, but then when they're like, "Will you suck my dick?" I go no.
Really?
Yeah, except one Scottish guy.
just felt like the Scottish guy would be a bit cleaner.
Not that he was just, I don't know. It just like worked out that way.
Well, I was gonna ask you about this later,
really,
but I might
have
as well
a choice.
Ask. What's that?
Nothing.
I was gonna ask you about this later, but I might as well ask it now since we've talking about sex so much.
Yeah.
I would consider you quite a sort of sex positive person.
I am. Yeah.
I was reading. I was reading something interesting you wrote about just women and maybe...
I wrote something?
Well, it was a written or an interview, but you were basically talking about how if a woman says she hasn't had an orgasm, that somebody's doing it wrong.
Well, of course that. It's just, I mean, this... I majored in sociology, which is not a real major, but I wrote one of my final papers and one of my big research things was about... abstinence-only education, the concept of virginity and what that means for women and just like society and why it's so pushed and what this has to do with the conservative party and all this stuff. And everything I read, it was just very disappointing. And I think it gives women not healthy or good ideas about sex and causes a lot of problems. Mm. And I just think that women should be taught in girls, like young girls, sex ed, young boys, everyone should be taught about coming. And instead of teaching women like, oh, you should save yourself for your husband or for someone that loves you or a boyfriend, it should be like, you should just fuck someone that's going to make you feel good and it has nothing to do with it. Because what so often happens is girls in high school be tricked by boyfriends that are like, but I love you, and then they fuck and it's terrible, and they're like, oh, I guess I just have to fuck this person and it sucks, instead of being like, oh no, I know I'm supposed to feel good from this. And so it's just something that's important to me because I think it fucks with girls.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it's important from the point of view of enjoyment of sex, but also important from the point of view of making women more comfortable as sexual beings.
Yeah, and it also puts a lot of pressure on women for being like the gatekeepers and having to be like, oh no, not for me, and being in charge of like whether someone has like whether sex is happening or not. And it makes men, I mean, it's a lot, it has a lot to do with like rape culture and everything, where you put, instead of saying like, hey women, like you should want to fuck, you put young girls in a position of like, you better be saying no, you have to be saying no. And so it just creates a really strange dynamic for men and women. And it also makes women think that that's the only value they have. Like, I used to have to do student teaching in sex ed classrooms. And like, so much of it was taught that the only value girls have is virginity. And like, I talk about this in my act, but this woman brought out a rose and started ripping petals off the rose as like, that's an example of every guy you fuck. And then you're just left with this stem. And that's like, that's what you want to give to your husband, just a thorny stem. And I'm like, you're telling teenage girls that the only value that they have in this world is their virginity. It's like, fucked. It's really fucked. But
surely that's the extreme example. Surely that's like...
It was in Chicago public school.
Really?
Yeah.
That basically some sort of Christian teaching about sexuality?
Yeah, but it was Latino. I mean, it was a predominantly Latino like high school, and there was a lot of teen pregnancy. So like... I understand wanting to teach that, but it's still wrong, because then you not only do you tell women not to fuck, but that their value is attached to it. So then when they do fuck, suddenly they're not worth as much.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I wanted to ask you about it is because that's a huge issue in Ireland around
shame. Really?
Well, just, you know, people, there's been a huge change in my 25 years in Ireland. There's been a huge change to people's attitudes to sex.
Yeah.
But it certainly came from a place where there was a lot of shame. A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I
most old people. But especially the Catholics.
Yeah, but so I guess there hasn't been a hell of a lot of comedians in Ireland, particularly female comedians, that have talked really openly about sex. And you'll still find people in Ireland that will say things like, oh, that he's a dirty comic.
Yeah.
So I was curious.
If people think I'm a dirty comic.
Yeah. But do you think there's any value in... Or do you even care in terms of trying to make people laugh? Are you also trying to make people more comfortable with themselves in terms of this material? Or is that something that you were just talking about in an interview?
No,
like,
I mean,
you don't have like a goal in terms of the type of material you do that try to help women become more comfortable, right?
Yeah, I do. I want girl, like if you're on a date and I want girls to turn to their and be like, oh yeah, this dude doesn't make me come. Why am I fucking him? I want people to dump people for sure.
Yeah.
Or, like, have better sex that night.
Yeah. Because I
just, and it comes from personal experience. It's not just, like, all this teaching, all this research. Like, I had sex for so long with just, like, oh, I guess this is it.
Mm.
You know?
But don't a lot of women, or certainly men and women, have that experience where they're just not great at it when they're younger?
For sure. But wouldn't it be cool if in sex ed they taught boys how to be better at sex? And that making a woman comes important.
Yeah. Because
with porn now, too, it's like, you know, so many people.
Mixed messages.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's not mixed messages at all. It's like the end of sex is when a dude is coming. You know, it's always about dudes coming. So yeah. Also, people are watching porn young and younger. So that's their idea, too.
Yeah, because years ago in a show that I did, I had a routine about. Why women in Ireland, certainly, but I think also in the United States, are not as open about masturbation. Whereas, like, for guys, it's like you hit 16 and you realize, hey, guys, we all jerk off. Who cares?
Yeah.
In Ireland, I still found a lot of women that wouldn't admit, like, even in their early 30s, they wouldn't admit that they masturbate.
Yeah.
And I was just doing a routine about, like, why wouldn't you? You know, like, why would you not figure out what floats your boat? And I got real mixed reactions. Like, some people love that routine, and then other people be like, oh my God, the masturbation routine came on and my mother was around. It was so embarrassing. You know, there was just still a huge amount of embarrassment around this concept of female masturbation.
I mean, the thing is, when I'm with my parents, I don't want to watch weird sex scenes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm actually very confused when I'm out at shows and there's just families laughing together and like Adele's on stage. Like, I just can't.
Yeah. All right. Well, that aside, okay, parents aside, there was still sort of a... Just a lack of comfortability with female masturbation.
Yeah.
Not amongst everybody, but certainly amongst a lot more people than
yeah.
the guys.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, in terms of like consent, you know, you sort of touched on an area there that I found very interesting lately. That horrible case came out with that kid, Brock.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot his last name.
Turner.
Brock Turner. And, you know, again, this conversation about consent. And you were talking about women being the gatekeepers. And he, I find it really confusing. Like, I would not know what to say to, like, a young man who clearly, like, the natural role is, like, I'm going to try to get through all the stages of...
Well, yeah, it makes sex for boys seem like it's, like, this game that needs to be won, and they have to trick girls into fucking, when it's, like, girls should want to fuck. They do. And it's, like, but it sets it up in a weird thing where it's, like, I mean, I can't imagine wanting to fuck a passed out, blacked out girl. Like, that just seems insane to me. And, I mean... That seems nuts. But if in your brain you've always been taught that like sex is something that you need to like get, it sets, I mean, I wouldn't say that like it's all innate in all men, because obviously not all men would rape, but it is like kind of set up as this thing where.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's pretty black and white in terms of what he did. But yeah. I also just mean in terms of how do we make clear, like, about what consent is? Because on one level, you're saying women get put up as the gatekeepers. But then on another level, it's like, you do need to let men know
that... Oh, you need to put them to jail. You need to
not the rape.
Them.
Okay, the question is, like, how do we make clear what consent is and what consent isn't in terms of...
There's, like, a fun thing I read on the internet where it was, like, treat sex like hot tea. Like, if you invited someone over for tea... And then suddenly they're like, oh, never mind, I don't want tea. You wouldn't force them to drink tea. Or if they fell asleep at your house, you wouldn't just pour tea on them. And so use hot tea as the, what's it called, example.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To sex. And that's
yeah,
what you
just
do.
Just make that clear.
Yeah, it's like weird. And it's like weird that the discussion is even like a discussion. I was watching a clip and Amber Rose was on some show with Tyrese and Rev Run. And Amber Rose was just like, even if I'm naked laying there and suddenly I go, no, you just have to be like, okay. And Reverend was like, yeah, but if you're presenting yourself a certain way, and it's like, are you fucking retarded? Like, it's ridiculous,
right,
to
yeah.
me. It's so ridiculous. It's like this ownership of women and their bodies is really crazy. But yeah, if a girl just changes her mind, or maybe you're bad at sex, maybe they're just like not into it anymore, or they're making out with you and they hate you. Like, why is it always the girl? Like, maybe you suck. Maybe your breath smells and they don't want to have sex with you anymore. Like,
yeah.
They're allowed to not want to have sex with you. It's so weird.
That it's like a complicated thing.
Yeah, it's not complicated at all. It's like, are you a rapist or are you not?
Yeah, and you're cool with that. Yeah, that's interesting.
I don't get it.
Yeah. That's right. It's good to just put it out in those terms. Because honestly, guys, sometimes I get confused myself on like, because I mean, I'm a 40-year-old guy. It's not an issue for me now.
Yeah.
You know, like, but.
And college is fucked. And like, the thing is, I've had experiences. I've talked about this before, but like, one, I had an experience where I was really, I had a crush on someone. So we were texting for a while, but I was wasted. And he came over and we had sex. And the next time we hung out, I was like, oh God, so blacked out. And he was like, oh, I was sober. And the thing is, I was texting him. I wanted him to come over, but it grossed me out that he wanted to fuck someone that was blackout drunk.
Yeah, that you couldn't remember.
I mean, I remember, but like, that's weird to me. Like, why do you want to fuck someone that's blacked out? Like, it's weird.
So then how do you feel about, in Ireland, somebody came out, an Irish journalist came out and said, it's important to talk about rape culture, but it's also important to say to women, you need to be responsible with your drinking.
Yeah, but men should not be raping. It's the same thing of putting pressure on the woman to protect herself from getting raped when men just shouldn't be raping. It's like so weird that it's put on the woman. It's like, yeah, it's my birthday. I want to get fucking wasted. Why can't I get wasted? Or like, sometimes you dress in a way that you want to have sex with someone, but it doesn't mean you want to get raped. You know, it's these weird things that suddenly you're not allowed to like, accidentally drink too much or like drink too much or get blacked out or have like a wild bachelorette party or whatever.
Yeah.
What is it? A hen party?
A hen party.
Without being blamed for it. Cause it is weird. Cause like sometimes when I walk home late at night to the train from the cellar, it's like a 15-minute walk. And I'll think about it and I'll be like, you know what? I'm not a fucking victim. Like, I should be able to walk. I'm not scared. Like, I'm a human being in this world and I should be able to walk and not be scared of people. And then while I'm walking, I'm like, if I get attacked, the first thing everyone will ask is, why were you walking home at night? Like, yeah. You can't win. You know, it's like I'm either a victim and I'm living like a victim, or I'm blamed because I was out at night or I was drunk or whatever.
Yeah,
because
I tried to do that myself. I remember when I was a kid, I used to be afraid of walking in the dark, like outside. Mm-hmm. And I would always think somebody was going to attack me.
Yeah.
Like, of course, it was in my head, right? So when I hear the way women describe what you just described, I often think you have to remember what it was like then, because it's genuinely frightening.
Yeah. And knowing that everyone will blame you anyways.
Yeah.
So it's like this thing of like, is it even worth walking to the train? Because if anything happens, it's my fault. It's not anyone else's fault because it's late at night. But another thing, like once I was like super blacked out, this is a while ago at the best place in Chicago. But I remember unblacking out just like with a dick next to me. And I was like, oh, where am I? And I just was like, this dude was there and I was like, oh, I have to leave. And he's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, everything's fine. Can you just help call my friend? And he called my friend, told him the address, and I got picked up. She came and got me, and that was it. And he was like, I'm so sorry. I'm like, yeah, you didn't do anything wrong. I'm sure I was like aggressively trying to have sex with you.
Oh yeah.
So it didn't bother me. So I'm not saying it's like a black and white area with like drinking and not and stuff
sure.
And everyone can, I'm sure if someone else had that experience,
but that's cool that he was like, look, forget it, I'll just put this guy away.
Yes, but the other side would be like me waking up and being like, oh, I don't want to do this, and him being like, what the fuck.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you do that to someone? They were drunk and now they're not, and they're saying they don't want to fuck anymore. Like, why do you feel like they have to suck your dick? Like, yeah. I don't get that mentality.
I have been upset before in that situation,
but you could be upset.
I haven't gotten aggressive, but I have been like, fuck, you know.
Yeah.
Very on the very disappointed.
Yeah,
side.
I know it's weird to men that women think of themselves more than just like sex objects. So if they decide not to fuck, they like, I think sometimes they don't realize that suddenly they're worthless in men's eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of it suddenly as worthless. I think it's just,
well, yeah, you're mad and you're like, why? Well,
whatever chemical reaction is going on in the brain, it's definitely like there's a desire element, but that's fine. I mean, I can control it, but. All I'm saying is I have been disappointed in that situation.
Yeah, we all have. I mean, everyone wants to fuck. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's girls I've had a situation where this guy, he was a bartender at the show I used to perform at in Chicago. And he had a girlfriend. I knew they had broken up and I always thought he was cute. And he was like, hey, do you want to hang out after? He came to a show, Denver. And he's like, do you have a show this weekend? He came to my show. He came to the bar afterwards. He asked if I wanted to go to an after hours bar by his house. I'm like, yes. He asked if I were to come over to his house. I'm like, awesome. And then he didn't want to have sex with me. And I was pissed.
Oh, you were pissed?
Yeah. I was sitting like, you know, and then all he wanted to do was cuddle. And he was like cuddling me and he was sleeping, but he wouldn't make out. He wouldn't do anything. He just, and
that that was some revenge thing he had going on in his head.
I don't know if it was revenge though. I think it was like, he probably just missed having a girlfriend and needed some attention. Needed, and I was just that person, but I was annoyed. I was like laying there as the sun came up, just being held by a stranger who I haven't fucked. And I was like, I yelled at him and left.
Yeah. And other times perhaps you had wished for that cuddle.
No, being cuddled by a stranger is creepy.
All right, I want to ask you a few other things.
Yeah, let's keep it more light. Yeah, let's have it more fun. This is very serious. No one's going to come to my show.
Oh, no, don't worry about that.
Oh, this is just for fun.
Yeah, besides, yeah, I mean, the just having a funny conversation is not interesting.
Okay.
But that area we just discussed is something I'm very curious about, and it doesn't get discussed as much in Ireland. But no. I want to talk about something else completely.
Is rape a bit? Because abortion's illegal, right?
Yes, and another law was just voted down. People who have are carrying a baby with fetal abnormalities are still not allowed to have an abortion in Ireland. So, that you know, you're coming into
a,
you know.
So like, do a lot of people leave Ireland to get abortions?
They have to go to Britain.
Okay. But
they can go other places, but they tend to go to Britain. But that's tough for, you know, a married couple that just die and have a kid, and then suddenly they know that the child is not going to survive when it's born, and they're forced to go through with it if they stay in Ireland. So they have to go to the UK.
So it's just like a Catholic thing.
Yeah, and it's in the culture, you know. It's deeply ingrained in people's minds that it's murder. And that's a complicated issue in Ireland.
Yeah.
That's one of the
reasons
why I wanted...
It's a complicated issue here.
Yeah, but that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about sex and sexuality, because you're very comfortable talking about it, and I can assure you some people in Ireland would not be. They'll be judging the shit out of you for the conversation that we have.
Like, when I go to the suburbs sometimes, or, like, different cities in the middle of the country, people usually don't like me.
Hmm. Which is crazy when you think about it, because you go, well, it's just sex. Of all the things, of all the horrible things.
It's weird. I mean, there's a lot of, it's a very vulnerable thing. And so that's why, it's like hard to be comfortable with it.
So I want to ask you about something else completely.
Okay. I can't wait.
So you're born, where were you born?
In Odessa. So it was the former Soviet Union, Russia, but now it's Ukraine. It's on the Black Sea.
Yeah. So you were born as your parents are Russian speakers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they came here when you were three, right?
Yeah.
And there was, what was their reason for emigrating?
So we came on religious asylum. So like between like 88 and 92, a lot of Russian Jews left. All of them. Like a lot. If you meet a Russian Jew around my age and you ask them like when they came, it was then.
It was then.
Even my sister's 10 years old. Like most Russian Jews came when I came. There was a bunch of that came in the 70s too, but I think they were like richer and smarter. But so we all came and we went through like Italy and Austria through immigration. And then it was like, I don't know if the Jewish organizations in America helped or whatever. But when we moved to Chicago, there was like we had a lot of help from the Jewish community.
And
so we had like a volunteer family that helped us like learn about America. And
while you were still in Europe,
to Jewish school. No, like when we moved and like. Yeah.
But can you remember that? You were three, so.
I remember preschool for sure. I remember one memory in Italy, but it was just like falling into a fountain filled with fish. So that's like my first memory. But in America, I don't remember like maybe the first memories of like just getting here and acclimating, but it was pretty traumatic. And I remember a lot of like, I remember being in preschool for sure.
And by the time you were in preschool, had English become the language that you spoke, or you still? Like
I didn't. I don't know. It was weird. It's like I watched TV. I never went to like ESL or anything like that. I just learned in school and watching television.
Yeah.
But Russian in the house. It was a very confusing time. And I'm trying to talk about it more and more in my stand-up.
Just being like a bilingual child. And
not even just bilingual. It's just like my parents were also old. So by the time we moved here, my dad was 52 and my mom was 44. So it's like really hard to acclimate to a new country when you're that old. So basically, I had no guidance. That's why I'm like such a free spirit, I think, is because
they were just as lost as you.
Yes. Yes. So when we were at the banks, I was like 6 or 7 translating for my father. Like we were kind, like me and my sister were kind of the gatekeepers of this country. And so none of us knew what was going on. Simple things too, like Halloween. Like what's
Halloween?
Yeah. Or like I would get invitations from kids at school for birthdays and like we didn't know what RSVP means. You know, just like parent-teacher the grading system's different, school's different, and like what they're teaching me is different from what's outside in the world. And it was a weird way to grow up.
Yeah. So do you have any stand-up memories of just the absolute cultural difference between what was going on in your house and other people's houses as you got to know them?
Oh my god.
Like anything distinct? Just because you're being raised by
food. Like I got made fun of my lunches.
Yeah.
But now looking back, it's like my parents gave me the best lunches. Like these kids were eating weird peasant sandwiches and I was having like
having like peanut butter and jelly and you were bringing like real food.
Yeah.
Borscht.
But I was like embarrassed, you know?
Yeah.
The biggest, like, they didn't understand sleepovers. They didn't understand going to the mall and just wasting money.
Yeah.
They'd be like, what do you mean you're going to go to, what do you mean? What do you need money for? What do you need to go to the mall for? They don't understand going to restaurants, going out to eat. I mean, my dad was born in 1938, my mom in 1945. So, like, Stalin, commune, all of it.
Yeah,
terrible
they lived
lives.
Through it all.
So, like, they didn't understand a lot of stuff, just joy. Like they didn't get it. They didn't get like not, they didn't have a lot of homework. They didn't understand.
Yeah. So life was always a struggle for them.
Yes.
And then they came to America. Did that change?
I mean, they still worked really hard. Like they're all retired now, but like, you know, yeah, they worked but I think just like a regular amount of work.
Yeah. Life was easier then though.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, they got a house. I mean, they're really badasses. And that's the thing that's that they don't understand about my life is like their life. And they brought up my sister this way is like so family centric. So to them, all their joy comes from family. They don't really have hobbies or interest. Like, they just take care of their family.
Yeah.
And so now that I live in New York, they don't know what to do.
Because you have not followed the path they expected, right?
They're like, if they talk to me on the phone and I don't seem happy, they call my sister. They're like, something's wrong with her. You know, they don't have anything to do but to worry about me.
Yeah. But I think that's all parents.
Is it?
My mother's like that.
It's not fun.
Like, I've lived in another country since I'm 14. My mother still worries. Like, if she's aware, you know, most of the day, most of my years, I've been out of her sort of scope of noticing.
Wow.
But if she's aware, she still worries, like, as if... You know, so I'm not saying it's not to do with sort of who they are, but I think it might just be because they're parents as opposed to being Russian Jewish parents.
But like I had kids that went to sleep, like my friends that went to sleepaway camp for 8 weeks. Like I couldn't do that. I have to talk to my parents every single day. They call me every day.
Yeah. I mean, I talk to my mother most days.
It's weird.
Yeah, you're just maybe surrounded by so many people from fucked up lives
that
you don't realize.
That's exactly how good our lives are. Yeah, that our parents care. I'm trying to think of like big differences.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I just was wondering if there was anything that stood out because it's quite unique.
Who is it?
It is somebody that you live with has just walked into
the
house.
Hey, Brendan.
This is Brendan. Brendan, are you Irish American with that name?
Yeah, I am.
Right. No, I mean, Irish American. Brendan Eyre.
Brendan.
My dad's from Ireland.
Oh, his dad is from Ireland. Where is he from?
Oh,
his dad is from Dublin. We're chatting here about Lisa going to Dublin.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. We're talking about how they're not into sex.
So I'm sorry that we took over your living room for our podcast.
No,
I usually do.
I'm sorry I interrupted.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, my air conditioning.
Oh, cool. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Cool. Well, he can give you some advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like huge differences, but like, yeah, they just didn't get anything. So yeah. I got to get away with it. But I also like, I didn't have any chores. They didn't really, I didn't have rules, curfews.
Do you think
like
you
that.
Had more freedom because they were just a bit unaware of what was going on, or they just thought that's the way you should raise your kids?
I don't know.
Yeah. And what were they like? Why did so many Russian Jews leave at that time? Was there actual oppression of Jewish people, or it was
everyone just hates Jews.
Yeah.
It was a silent, like the government, you know, like,
I mean,
I don't
what in history gave you that idea? I'm just kidding. So they came here, and now I haven't had a haircut in New York for 15 years. That wasn't by a Russian Jew.
Really?
Yeah, they've taken over the barber industry.
I didn't know that.
Oh no, that's real.
Cool. Well, I have a lot of family in Brighton Beach.
Oh, you do, right? That's where a lot of people went down.
The cousins, and I'm so thankful my parents didn't go there, because they're just living the Russian life, you know.
Yeah. Whereas, so you, I mean, I like.
The thing that my parents did teach me that I really enjoyed that other families, like some of my friends, but like. They're very generous people. So once you come over, it's like immediately just like a spread. What do you want to eat? Let's eat. Let's drink. Like whatever you need. Like they're there for people. And then like I'd go to my friend's house and then be like, that's just for school lunches. Oh, the fruits are too expensive. It was just like it was weird. That kind of stuff was weird. Or like gas. Like the first time I heard like someone want gas money, I was like horrified.
Gas money?
Yeah. Like if you're driving and they're like, oh, are you going to help with gas? I'm like. Oh, okay. Like, I just didn't... That's not how my family operated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
they just take care of stuff. Even, and I think it's like because they were so poor. So when you have something, you share it and you don't ask for things. So it was always confusing when people like, yeah.
And so they're Russian Jewish. They come over here. The English is definitely their second language.
Yeah.
Were you raised quite religious or were you raised more?
When we first got here, like my sister graduated from a religious high school. I met her like husband there and stuff. And we did Shabbat every Friday for
What's
a little
that?
Bit.
I guarantee
like
no one in Ireland.
Oh,
though.
Like the Sabbath. So yeah. Like you light the candles, you know, you don't really do electricity. You spend time with your family. You eat. I mean, we weren't like super religious, but we did that. And I went to a Jewish school. But as soon as we moved to the suburbs, I went to public school. We do the holidays. But even then, like, I don't care.
Yeah. It wasn't a big influence in your life.
No.
And so, you know,
it was like we just didn't know the rules because religion wasn't really allowed. So like we would celebrate the holiday, but like eat whatever. Like it wasn't like we were praying. We would just like commemorate the day.
Yeah.
But when my sister and her husband, they met when they were 15. They're 39 now. And his parents lived across the street from us. And they're more Jewish. They're like conservative Jews. So like we would go to their house for holidays and they knew all the prayers and shit.
And they're cool with you doing what you do now?
Oh, yeah.
No problem.
No problem.
And so, like, you know, you get a lot of comedians talk about being Jewish, and there's like a Jewish sort of upbringing trope.
Yes.
You know, the worrying mother and all that. Do you fit into that, or is it completely?
Yes.
Oh, you do fit into that, despite
me as myself.
Well, no, I don't mean you as
I
a
thought
performer.
My mom.
No, I don't mean as a performer. I mean
when there's plans, like if there's a concert or a sporting event, I get a lot of anxiety, like getting everyone's. That's anxious to me, but. I'm annoying. I complain a lot. I ask a lot of questions.
And these things, you think, all fit into the stereotype?
Yeah. Jews, that's why, Colin Quinn talks about it in his one-man show, too. Like, that's why Jews get what they want is because they, like, complain and ask, and they're not like, oh, it's okay. It's like, oh, no. They, like, inquire.
Yeah, you think that pushiness sort of stereotype is real?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I notice it, too. Like, when I'm in New York and I see how pushy people can be, and I just think, wow, it's the antithesis to say Irish people that are all like, it's okay. You know, it's okay. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Irish people are stressed. They're keeping it all in.
Yeah. You think that's true?
I do.
I mean, I think you're right, but I'm just wondering how you know that.
Even most recently, I have a couple friends and they are married and they had like a rough year, right? Just like separate, you know, not with their marriage, but like. They just had a rough year. So I just took the man out for lunch. And I was just like, hey, just so you know, we've been giving her a lot of attention. Cause she's you can always come to me. Like, if you ever need to talk or you need to, like, blow off steam or something's going on, just know that I'm here to. And he shut down like I've never seen a human shut down.
He's an Irish guy or Irish-American guy?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Just so shut down. Just me being like, hey. Anything upsets or you don't know how to handle something, I'm here. You can always talk to me. Just like shut down. I have nothing to talk about. Everything's fine. It's fine. It's fine. And like that was
because that's an American stereotype to Irish people. Just that Americans like to be open about their feelings and sort of talk things out and go to therapy.
Yeah.
And like just say in American comedy, you will often see that it dismissed as sort of typically American.
Yeah. That's where. I mean, the thing is, my Russian parents are like this too, and. I've been thinking about this a lot lately and just like how my generation is really not living traditional lives, following their passion, like not. And I think it's because all of our parents follow the traditional lives and were polite or like kept things in and they are miserable.
Mm.
And so all of us are like, yeah, we're not going to do what you guys did because it's miserable. And now we have options.
Do you think they're miserable still or do you think they've.
I would not want. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not miserable because they're happy for their kids and grandkids, but like they just sit at home. Like they're not. Yeah, they have a lot of problems.
Yeah. And you
they
never
don't talk about things. It's the same fights over and over. It's just like not good communication. It's very secretive, not trusting of strangers, not a lot of friends.
So do you see yourself as an immigrant or do you see yourself as like 100% American?
I'm a little bit of both.
Yeah. And not that it matters.
When
I'm curious.
When I don't know things, I like to say, oh, I'm just an immigrant. Be like, it's just confusing.
Yeah, you just dismiss it. You get yourself out of a jam.
Yeah, but I'm very American, I think.
Do you ever talk to Eugene Merman about it, or are you friendly
he's
with him?
He's not really my friend. I don't know him.
I was just curious, because he's the only other person I know that's kind of in your situation.
No,
as in, he's
I've
a Russian.
Really met him.
To a degree, he's a Russian immigrant.
Yeah.
But I haven't heard Again, I haven't heard him speak so much about it, but I guess
there's
it's a
lot
unique
of weird superstitions I still follow. There's like, yeah, there's weird things I do that I think have to do with my upbringing, but I'm very American. Like, I like going out to eat. I like spending money. Yeah. I'll pay for parking.
Now, comedy-wise, we've discussed a number of times just in passing the difference between, like, say, British and European, just like European-based yeah. comics and American comics. Like, I know you're obsessed with Dave Attell.
Yeah.
I think both creatively and perhaps perhaps deeper.
Yeah.
Do you have any European comedy crushes? I mean creatively, creative-wise.
Am I supposed to say you?
No, I'm just curious.
You're leaning your head in like I should be saying
No,
Dez.
I was not setting it up for me. I just mean, you know, has there anybody that caught your eye like creatively? I mean, like in terms of being a fan from the other side of the pond.
You know, Jimmy Carr was here recently. Yeah. I liked watching him. That was fun. Who's the guy? Is it Alan Carr? Is that
the gay guy?
He has a talk show.
Yeah.
With
Chatty
the three
man.
People?
No, that's Graham Norton.
Oh, okay.
But they are both, well, they're both gay and they both have chat shows.
Yeah.
But Alan Carr
like
is called.
I like that it's called chat shows.
Oh, yeah. What?
Talk shows.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Chat shows.
Wow. See
so
that? Now, there's
better.
A moment that I forget is that every now and then I say things that I don't realize are.
Chat shows sounds so much more fun.
Yeah. Well, they have chat shows. Alan Carr's is called Chatty Man. Graham Norton's is probably the best. I think of all the chat shows on the telly, including America.
Yes.
I think Graham Norton's is
American
probably the best.
Shows are boring now.
Yeah.
It's boring. Well, maybe it's because, but when I was a kid, I watched all of the late night talk shows and I loved it and I love interviewing and it's so fun. But now I don't know if it's because we're in the industry or because I'm older, but it's not as fun for me because I know it's just people promoting shit and it's all planned and it's like, no, there's no fun. And with Graham Norton's, there's like a element of spice and fun that I enjoy.
Yeah, well, because he leaves the people on the couch, which is important, you know?
Yeah.
I think that means that you can have some fun.
And Craig Ferguson, I loved too. He was a great interviewer. He kind of, you made an ugly face. You don't like him.
No. If you saw anything in my face, which it wasn't, I was probably thinking about something else. But you could argue that it's because I also auditioned for that show.
Oh,
that
you would have been better.
I auditioned for, what is it called?
You'd have still been on the air. The Late Late Show.
No, I didn't audition for his gig. I auditioned for this new thing that he did a pilot for, which is
Celebrity Game Show.
So it's like a real game show, but it also has like a scripted element behind the scenes.
Okay.
I auditioned for the host.
You'd be good.
Feel the crunch. Crunch time. That's what it was called. Now you're ready to feel the crunch. I remember the audition well.
You got to get a job on TV here in America, right?
I got to.
You got to.
It's definitely a goal.
Yeah.
A basic goal. But yeah, I mean, my American career, we can discuss.
It's different.
We can discuss another time. I mean, the industry is very different here.
Yeah. Mm. People make money faster out there.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you about that, actually.
Yeah.
About how. Just the difference between the American comedy industry and, say, British-Irish comedy industry. Just assuming you're not that familiar with what's going on in Ireland.
I'm not. And I, you know, when I was in Glasgow, a lot of people made me laugh, and I had a great time watching comedy. But I don't remember anyone's name.
But, like, what I notice here, say, coming here after basically my entire career being abroad, I notice the prize is a lot bigger. You know, if you nail it, if you win... Yeah. A coveted prize. It's huge. But on the flip side, the journey to get there seems more cutthroat, seems to be a lot more comics, less camaraderie amongst comics. Not so much in the cellar where we have a nice little vibe going, but I just mean in general, it feels like everyone's out for this sort of limited amount of incredible riches.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not exactly sure that's good creatively or bad creatively, but
it's definitely a longer journey, and I think because, you know, I came up with a lot of people in Chicago, and I mean, maybe secretly they all hate me, but it seems like we all have each other's back and are rooting for each other and helping each other out, and that's important. And at the cellar, like, I do feel camaraderie, but because there's so many people I hate or just don't respect, and that's where, like, the weirdness comes from. There's just so many people.
Yeah.
It's hard to want everyone, you know, to want the best for everyone or, like, to enjoy everyone.
Yeah. Because I find
it. And especially when you see shady ass behavior, because some people do see this business as cutthroat, or like, if they get this, then I can't have that. And it's like, there's enough work for everyone. We're at a really, you know what I mean?
Especially
like,
now that there's an outlet everywhere you look for your
not
creativity.
Not only that, it's just like, we're not all going to be good at the same thing. We all have different paths, and some people are going to hit sooner or later, or disappear or never disappear, or like be forever. Like, everyone has a different journey, and you can't all want the same thing. And people that are cutthroat, it's embarrassing, and I think it makes their comedy worse.
Yeah. So it's kicking off for you now for my sort of, I mean, it's funny because I was there the moment that Esty passed you.
Were you?
Yeah, I remember her handing you the W-2.
Oh my God, I didn't know that you were there.
W-9?
Well, how could I have, I couldn't
have known. The tax form.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize you were having a tryout that night, and then, because I remember the moment SD gave me the tax form, you know, I thought that was like, I didn't realize I accidentally got passed in the cellar, and that I thought I was just going for a spot.
Yeah.
And then the sort of, the momentous passing happened without me realizing that it happened. I didn't know it was a thing because I wasn't living in New York at the time. Happened a few years ago. But anyway, I happened to be there for you getting the... and then I read that this was one of the highlights of your comedy career.
Yeah.
It happened around the time that you're getting like a half-hour special on Comedy Central.
It was the same week. So I got passed to the cellar as the same week I taped my half hour for Comedy Central. And then I quit my day job that week too. So it was just like a huge week. And so it's been like a year and a month since then.
Oh, it's only been a year and a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now
so it's been a huge year. It's been the year that I've been wanting since, you know, for a long time.
Yeah. And did you find after the half hour comedy special that people were noticing you more, loads of social media stuff? Like, did you all of a sudden feel the excitement of like, wow, my name is getting out there?
That doesn't... The thing that that I cared about the most, that I noticed the most, is like, it's a certain level of like prestige or like something in the community. So now I'm at a point where like, if I message any bar show and go, can I do a set? They're like, yeah.
Boom.
Like, they're excited to have me versus like having to prove yourself. So it just made getting spots easier. Or like, if I call any club and I'm like, I need to work something out, they're going to say yes. So it just gave me an opportunity to do stand up every night, which is what I wanted.
Yeah. So now that you have the passport, where do you want to go?
What do you mean?
Like, now that you have this sort of, you're at a stage now where I guess you kind of look to me, I see you're looking around with like quite a lot of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have like a real vision for where you want to go, or are you still at a place where you're figuring out who you are as a performer, figuring out what you want to do?
Well, it's both. So yeah, I always want to get better. I think I want to talk about the difference between, like, here in America, a lot of the people that a lot of us younger comics look up to, it took them 10, 15, 20 years to hit. And so in my head, that's always been the projection. So I've never expected anything because I know it takes 20 years to be good at this.
Yeah.
And I think the expectations are different across the pond, right? A little bit.
No. It depends what the goal is. You know, like, different mm-hmm. people have different... You mean in terms of becoming like the best comic that you can be?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think the in terms of the various expectations that people can have, I think it's fairly similar. I think the only difference across the pond is that people expect to get more money and more time on stage quicker, which you can get.
Yeah.
But in terms of like television and all that, I think the divide is the same. Younger people, because they've grown up in the era of social media and YouTube, are just more equipped to think there's a career off the stage for me. They can think about that a lot quicker nowadays. I think that's generational.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sort of that generation, but you still have a great respect for the Louis C.K.'s and the David Tells of this world, who sort of hustled through the grim mid-90s.
Yeah.
But that might be, I mean, they also may be just a product of their time in that mm-hmm. after that comedy boom of the late 80s, there wasn't a hell of a lot of opportunity.
Absolutely.
Which maybe made them better comics. I mean, it doesn't matter. That's like an intellectual discussion about why they're as good as they are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I just like, I love hanging out with the older guys, like Conquest, Robert, all of them, because it just, it's this perspective I have in my head that I feel really lucky to have after hanging out with them. It's like, you're going to pop, you know, there's going to be huge moments and then there might not be. And so it's this thing of like, you need to find joy from the work in itself and just like trying to be the best and not kind of be distracted by the
industry,
the fancy things, because those things can be huge but can then go away forever and you don't, you can't be distracted by them. That's the lesson I kind of learned from them. There's people, I mean, Louis C.K. tells a story, I forgot where I heard it, but about Chris Rock and when he got fired from SNL, Louis was saying that he kind of disappeared for 4 years and no one really knew what was up, and then he came back and headlined Caroline's and it was like an hour they couldn't believe, and they were all like, holy shit. And it's this thing of like, yeah, after you get fired or things don't work out or you're in the bottom, are you gonna be resentful and be angry and be like, well, I was famous, I'm from SNL, or are you gonna fucking get to work and put out good material,
put out good stuff?
And so that's why it's like all this stuff I'm doing is so exciting and I'm so happy and I feel really proud and excited, but like I just don't want to get tricked by it.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to get tricked. That's one thing that's definitely different in the United States. They're full of shit here. Like, yes, the industry are promise you the sun, moon, and the stars, and then forget about you in 5 seconds.
Yeah, every meeting is like, you're the best. And it's like, all right. I mean, who, like, you don't even know. It is weird. Yeah, you
but
have
it's good to learn that. I mean, everyone, like, particularly guys in Ireland or in the UK that sort of do Montreal, or they did Aspen years ago when it was going. And like all the industry see them and then they get all excited. Like they all come back. And like the funny thing is, say the Irish media, they love a story about somebody cracking the States. Like, like that somehow is like just an incredible story. So like even like after somebody has a meeting, the Irish media will write a story about like somebody's cracking the States, you know, like, and it's all really exciting. And then of course, like nothing comes of it. But even in Ireland and in the UK, they know the American industry are full of shit.
Yes.
But it's just a general positivity that pervades the sort of vernacular here.
Yeah. And then like once you realize that the industry are just idiots like the rest of the country, like the rest of the world, you know, like there are people that are great at their job and bad at their job. There's good therapists, good doctors, bad ones, tattoo artists, comedian, everything. So like to trust all industry or like all of a sudden be desperate for any of their attention or anything is ridiculous because they could be bad. You know, like why it's like. But you have to learn these things and like you go to these meetings or, you know, you're so desperate for a manager agent and then you get one and you're like, oh, you're kind of an idiot. I'm better than you. And then you fire them and then you learn like, no, I want someone that's awesome and that I connect with and that's going to work well. And you have to like learn these things.
But you like the game though, too, right? I mean, I know you love comedy
and
you love performing, but do you like the game of the industry, the meetings, the trying to make things happen?
I mean,
happen?
I'm made for meetings and lunch. I'm made for lunch meetings. I am. I'm like, I'm really good at chatting and having a good time with people. But as soon as I'm not interested, I really just shut down.
Yeah.
I've been at meetings where someone will be like, well, you seem pretty bored. And I'm like, yeah. This isn't for me. Or they're like, do you have anything for us? And I didn't, I'm like, I don't have, I'm not, I don't want to tell, no, I'm not working on anything. And then I leave.
Yeah.
But if it's like a cool place and I want to impress, I can chat. But yeah.
So before we finish up, like in terms of heading to Dublin, what are you?
But I am working on stuff. I'm not like lazy, you know?
I don't think you're lazy. I don't think you're lazy at all. You're always gigging.
But I want an hour, but I don't know when that's going to happen. I want it to be good. I want a new hour.
Well, that's another big difference. Like people think about that hour as if it's like some difficult to attain thing.
It's not difficult. But after my half hour, I was like, okay, new stuff. Got to get new stuff. And I just started immediately like writing and being so hard on myself after every set if I wasn't doing enough new. And I was like putting all this pressure on myself. And then it hit me where I was like, oh yeah, this is fun. All I've ever done is have fun. Like, why am I stressing? No one's waiting for my hour. No one knows who the fuck I am. Go have fun and do stand up and don't worry about anything.
Yeah.
And then I've been having fun again and now I have like a new 40.
And the bits that existed get better anyway.
Yes.
You know, it's a pity to leave them too soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm always telling people that. Like, it's like, you think you need this brand new bit. It's like, keep doing the other bit and see where it goes.
Absolutely. And I'm having just like a fun time doing stand up and then I'm creating a show.
You're writing a show. Oh, you're writing a stand-up show.
No, I have a single cam like show that I'm writing with my friend Prescott and our manager Sam, and we've been working on it for a year and a half.
All right.
Maybe 2 years. And then I have this other show. Me and my friend were like ready to pitch a non-scripted, sizzle ready, treatment ready, everything ready. And she got a writing job. So it's on the back burner. But
I heard you mention how much she's getting too. Good for her.
Yeah, she's killing it. She's really good and talented. And so then it's like, that's fine too. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you get to go to Dublin.
I get to go to Dublin. I can't believe, yeah, this summer is so fun. And I'm going to Dublin straight from Montreal. So I'm really like living like the dream life.
And what would you be most, just because these first four podcasts that I'm doing, the first four of my life, are sort of motivated by New York comics that are going to the festival. What do you think you're most looking forward to in terms of performing in Dublin? You'll be performing in tents in a park.
Well, first, I love comedy festivals because it's like summer camp for us. You know, it's like you're all together. No one's going to get like, it's just a fun time to meet people, hang out and party. So like, I just love hanging out with comics that you don't get to see. So Fest to me is just like fun. I also cannot wait to drink all the Guinness, and I want to sit in bars where they play music, you know?
What music? What is that?
But like, what is it called?
You mean traditional Irish music?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, that's quite touristy.
It is,
but that's okay.
But I don't mind.
You don't mind being that tourist.
No, because I love it. I mean, when they're just like sitting at a table playing music and I get to listen. Yeah, that's what I want. I'm not going to do that here. So it's like, I'm going to do that in Ireland. I don't need to go to Temple Bar. You know, I'm not like.
Yeah, you don't need to go to like super tourist center.
Yeah.
Well, we'll try to find you like a good genuine one.
I want to eat a lot of seafood.
All right.
Yeah, I like the fish and chips. I like mussels. I like the seafood soups.
Yes. Seafood chowder. Yeah. We don't say clam chowder. We say seafood chowder.
Because there's more in it. I love that.
Love all that.
I kind of want to hook up this time, so I'd like
you want to get a little foreskin going.
Yes. So that is a goal. I definitely want to try to have sex while I'm there, and I want to just have good shows. I want people to laugh. I want to do a good job. I want to connect with the audiences and like do good.
Yeah.
And I remember in Glasgow, I kept saying trail mix, and like nobody was laughing, but it was like this funny part, and I was like, what's going on? And they're like, no one knows what you're talking about. So
I don't know what they call trail mix in Ireland.
You know, but like,
well, we have
yeah,
them,
of course.
But I guess they're just not called trail mix.
Yeah, it's just like little things. But I'm excited to connect, and I want to know that like my comedy is something that just like being a person, no matter where you are, you can relate and laugh.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a great comedy exercise. I mean, you've done it before, but it's always a great comedy exercise to take your comedy to a complete other culture and see what translates.
Yeah,
and see what you need to change. And see if the Irish find you too filthy. I mean, I don't think they will, but
I am too filthy. The one thing I do say is like, I'm being 100% honest. Like everything I talk about, like I don't sit in a coffee shop writing jokes. Like that's not really my style. It's like, I live my life. I talk with friends. Hmm. I read articles. I read books. I watch TV. I just think it's like people's experiences when I'm with the girlfriends.
But Irish people love that the most.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like dirty, but it's all coming from just like a very real place. And
you're a pig. Is that what you're saying?
I am gross.
I'm kidding.
I mean, I cleaned my room for you to come here, and like, it's still messy.
Oh, I'm a slob. I'm not going to judge.
Are you really?
Oh yeah, I found this to be very tidy. I'm a slob.
I would never have expected that with the
how
well
you dress about me.
But you dress well, and it's you know, you it's like
those are the things that hang. The rest is all over the floor.
Yeah, it was weird that you came here and not the other way around. So
I would somebody else is coming to the apartment and I will clean it. But that apartment that I have is currently like a bomb hit. I'm a slob, but that's part of who I am.
I just feel like if I'm being honest, there's no way another person hasn't experienced it or felt that way.
Mm, I agree.
And if they don't want to laugh, that's fine. But like, there's no way you haven't.
Mm. Well, that's great.
Especially when it's like a good joke and like it's just like about cum or something, and then people are quiet and it's like, really? Like, I just like, it bothers me.
But I know there's more to your act than just cum.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It just brings me the most amount of joy.
I just both like on being stage. Gross. Oh, you like being gross.
Yeah, it makes me laugh. Like, I think it's funny. I don't know. I do think it's funny. But one day, I mean, we're all evolving, and one day I do hope to have, you know. a nice Edinburgh hour about
my family. Yeah, Edinburgh hour with a theme about your family, about the struggles of coming from another country at the age of three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, how's your Russian now?
I speak like maybe a sixth grader.
Oh, right.
Maybe a fifth grader.
Do you speak English or Russian with your parents?
Russian, but it sucks. It's gotten way, way worse. And their English has gotten worse because they're both not working. They're retired now.
Okay.
And so, like, their English is worse. My Russian's worse. And we have a very hard time communicating. It's really sad, to be honest.
Yeah.
There's just some things I can't get across. And by the time I do, it's not even interesting anymore. But I wish I had more Russian friends here to talk to in Russian to strengthen
Well,
it.
You could go down to Brighton Beach or you could just go to like a barbershop for a haircut because they are all Russian.
That's a new thing. I didn't really realize that.
I have encountered so many Russian Jews in the last year and a half in barbershops. I haven't had my hair cut by a non-Russian Jew for a year and a half.
Wow.
Other than Irish haircuts when I'm back in Ireland.
And are they nice?
They're all great. They're all really interesting. They all tend to be soccer fans, so we tend to talk about soccer.
It's a big soccer time right now.
Big soccer time. We talk about the Euros. And
when is the Euros? Is it almost done, or am I going to be there?
It's nearly done. There's a game on starting in a minute, and but it doesn't matter. We don't need to talk about football now. That'll be another podcast. But anyway, I want to say thank you very much, and I hope you have a great time in Dublin.
It was more serious than I could have ever imagined.
I know, but you got to understand, you're talking about things that the majority of people listening here would not be used to.
And you're so famous.
I'm not so famous.
What if people come pick it?
Pardon me.
What was that? Screaming whore when I come to the.
No, I mean I think people will find. Well, first of all, I guarantee you, not many Irish people have heard the story of a Russian Jewish immigrant to the United States.
I'm just more excited walking around Ireland with you and seeing how people react.
It's not gonna be what you think.
Do you remember the one time I brought you
Irish
to those
people,
girls?
Irish people are famous for not giving a shit about fame. That's like their bag, you know? They talk with great pride about how they didn't give Bono the satisfaction when he walked into the restaurant.
I hate Bono.
Well, then you're going to get on well in Ireland.
Ugh, he's the worst. He's disgusting to me. I don't buy it. He's a phony. But those Irish girls that were at the Fat Black once and I told them I knew you, they lost their minds. And then when I got you around the corner and brought you back, they were fucking excited.
Oh. Yeah, well, we'll see. But I don't think it's going to be the highlight of your trip. That's all I'm saying. I think there'll be more to your trip than that.
All right.
And
no,
and you can play the international too. I'll get you an extra little spot in my brother's club.
Oh, cool.
That's what Louis did. Louis did the festival and then he went over to the international.
That's very exciting.
Many have, actually. Michael Che, Eugene Merman.
Oh, fun. Many
have. So anyway, thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you. Sorry, my eye is so dry.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't come across on the radio.
Oh.
So I'll be.
Thank you. I can't wait to be there.
And I hope everyone comes out to see you and enjoys you. And we'll chat soon.
Thank you, Daz.
Bye. Thank you so much, everybody. Thanks for listening to the chat. Go to see Lisa at the festival. Go to see me at the festival. Go to see me in Cork. Go to see me in Edinburgh. Go to see everybody else I've chatted to. Anybody. Go to the festival in general. And what else do I need to say? Oh, this track that I've been using on the podcast is called New Dawn by Melty Brains. I say Melty Brains because they're Melty Brains with a question mark, and they're a great band and a great bunch of guys. Look them up on SoundCloud or on iTunes or on Apple Music or Spotify, wherever you get your music nowadays. Check them out. Melty Brains, great, great band. So thank you. We'll see you the next time. Spread the word about the podcast. And keep coming back. Like an AA meeting. Peace.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.